All right, I think we'll go ahead and get started and go on with the next session. It is a bit of a shorter one this time, but I have a lot of overflow from Jared's. and a few questions that I got last night on our structure. And so I thought I would take a little bit of time to share how we got started and some of the things that we have learned concerning organization and structure. But before I do that, I just wanted to underscore a few things that Jared said. The one thing that really stood out to me that he mentioned a couple times is that aspect of having to go back to the drawing board. And that's something that you will find that any one method is not the answer. You need to come up with an individualized situation for your class and for your situation, for your group, and for your time. It may be 6 months later that you have to change. And one of the things that I have seen over the years is that when a class has got things going well and things are flowing and they've got good order, and a year later, a year and a half later, it's all of a sudden like, what happened? They're losing it. And I think that a lot of that is just simply because you tend to go and coast. Things are going well. You've got a good system in place. You're no longer on the forefront of trying to make sure that you stay current with your discipline methods and with your making sure that the system that you have works for where you're at today. And you just kind of go and coast. And it all of a sudden you realize that, you know what, it's not working anymore. So be aware of that it it takes time to find what works for you, but then that may not remain the same and probably will not remain the same. It needs constant maintenance. The other thing that I think is so important is that aspect of consistency. You know, one thing that I'm learning as a parent, and this was actually something new for me in the last few years that I learned from another brother. I thought, you know, well, okay, they're just young. I'm trying to teach them an aspect of, well, no, you don't do this. And you kind of instruct them a few times before you actually give any kind of discipline with it. Her brother told me, no, that's not the right way to approach it. He said, if it's a no, there's a consequence, even if they didn't realize that it's a no. For a young child, they try to get something, and maybe it's the first time that they've tried to get that particular object, or they're just learning that that's a no-no, flick their hand. You know, put some pain with the no. That's the best way to teach them. And so I'm learning that as a parent, but I think the same thing applies to the classroom, that there should be some consequence, even though they didn't maybe even realize that it was a breaking of the rule. Now, don't be, you know, harsh about it. But just like that situation of, well, okay, is this actually a swear word? Let there be some consequence with it, even though maybe they didn't realize that they were breaking the rule, and get that first mark or whatever it may be, that they realize there is a boundary here, and it's not just words. Because if it's just words, they're expecting the next time it's going to be just words too. That's how it is in their home. It's all empty words that really don't mean much. And their parents make all kinds of threats and things that they never intend to carry out. So put some teeth to what you instruct them, even though there may be still a learning period there where you're still trying to find their way. And the other thing is, don't negotiate. Have some clear rules, and then let the rule be the final judgment. Because if there is negotiation or there isn't consistency, where one time I get a mark and the next time the teacher decides, well, this situation, I think we're just not going to do a mark. Now there's room for negotiation. And so then, when there's room for negotiation, then the child does something wrong, and then it's between me and them. And if I actually impose that thing, it's a personal offense against them that, well, you know, why don't you like me because you're giving me this mark? No, let it be the role that gives them the mark. And they break the role, they get the mark. There's no negotiation, and then it's not a thing of between me and you, it's a thing of the role board and you, and you're only the scorekeeper. So let that, and that's that issue of consistency and no negotiation is probably one of the most difficult aspects of parenthood. At least I'm finding that, and even in the classroom, some people do better with that than others. But I find it a difficult to keep that, know where the boundaries are, and that aspect of united teachers that he mentioned is very important in that, so that you're all together on where the boundaries are, and the boundaries are clear and the consequences are clear, so there's no question of what's going to happen if I break the rule. The other aspect of teacher unitedness is an aspect of affirmation. I had a child one time where it was like I took him out of the classroom and was talking to them. You got to go, you know, I got to take you home. And he was just throwing a fit. That was the last thing he wanted. And the home situation wasn't the greatest. In that situation, it was hard to know what to do exactly. But I had already told him we need to go home, and he was begging to be able to have another chance. And it was like, what do I do? I mean, he's just throwing a fit, and I'm about at the place where I'm just ready to say, okay, I'll give you another chance. And one of the other teachers walked out of the room to take a child to the bathroom or something, and I asked her what I should do, and she said, keep going, don't back down. And that was an encouragement to me. I mean, she didn't know the situation, she didn't know what was going on, nothing, but it was just that confirmation that gave me enough to say, okay, I gotta be firm here and keep going. And that was such an encouragement to me. And so every one of you can be that person, no matter what your role is, no matter what your rank is, no matter what your age is. I mean, this was actually one of the youngest members of our staff that walked out of the classroom at that point. And just that encouragement was all I needed to keep going. So be that positive encouragement and affirmation to each other, and be united as teachers. Another aspect of boundaries is that they will fight against it. And some of our teachers have struggled with being too soft, you know, and, well, they don't, you know, they don't have love in the home, and you got to give them some room and all of that. But I believe that the biggest thing that they, or one of the biggest things that they desire along with love, is some security. And those boundaries give them security. And so even though they fight against it for all they have, they want it. And they fight against it because they want to feel it. They want to feel that boundary is there. And it may not be a conscious decision, but that's what's going on in their hearts. They want to feel that boundary and know that it's there and know that there's consequences for what they're doing. And that brings security to them. They don't have that for the most part in the home. And so give them that, what they desire and crave, and give them clear boundaries and hold them even though they fight against it, and you feel like, well, this is the worst thing that could happen to them, is to keep that boundary. We've had many that have said, well, I'm never coming back again. I mean, that's one you hear all the time, it seems. But they come back. Because like Jared said, they want that. There's a need that's being fulfilled in their lives. And they'll come back. And time after time, they come back, even though they said, this is my last time, I'm never coming back. Because when there is consistency, when there's firmness, when there's love in that aspect of discipline and balanced with relationship, when those things are in place, they'll keep coming back, even though they've told you that this is their last time. These are just some random thoughts that I had listening to Jared, the aspect of touch is an important one. Many of these children know abuse. They know wrong touch. They know a hand that hits them. But to have a hand that just simply affirms them and, a pat on the shoulder, a tussle of the hair, whatever it may be, of a friendly, loving touch, I believe is important. And so even though you need to be careful with touch, especially boy to girl, girl to boy, yet that touch is important to them and is an important aspect of ministry. On the other hand, touch is something that they realize, they know, and are drilled that you've got your rights, don't let anyone touch you, and so it's something that you have to be very careful with. And I don't hear it near as much as we used to before we had relationships built, but that they know very well, and they were very free to say, don't touch me, and they know where their rights are, and they know where their that you have no right to touch them. We had a situation where one of the teachers in a classroom, they had a table, and he was sitting next to one of the boys, and that boy started acting up, and he just simply laid his hand on his knee and said, calm down. That was the wrong place to touch him. Don't touch a child on the knee. And that child went home and told his mom about this, and he touched me in the wrong place. The next week when we went to pick up, she nearly started a riot, the mother did, over this thing. And we were able to work through that and get beyond that. But be careful where you touch them. I asked the policeman one time, or the police chief, I said, what can we do? I mean, what do we have available to us for discipline? And, how far can we go? And they said, as far as touching them, you have nothing. He said, even as a policeman, we cannot touch somebody unless we're going to be arresting them. So you have to be very careful with that touch. On the other hand, if you're breaking up a fight, to get in between is probably the best thing you can do. If you at all possibly can, if there's a fight brewing or something going on, get physically in between so that you don't have to do any restraint. But as much as possible, try to form a barrier. You may receive some of the blows, but for the most part, you probably won't. But it at least brings a separation there, and there hasn't been a physical restraint. We had a situation, it's one that loves to get retold of my wife and myself, long before we were even courting, where we had a bus, and that bus wasn't the most orderly means of transportation because of the they didn't have the seat belts to restrain them, but there was some trouble brewing on the bus, and two young men, one of them was brand new, the first time there, or both of them, I think, were the first time there, or one of them might have been the second time there, and the other one was the first time there. And we thought we got them separated, but the one was sitting right in the front seat. And so the other one was then getting off of the bus to go home, and he managed to punch him as he walked by. And we weren't able to get that door closed quick enough to keep them separated, and a couple of them jumped off the bus after the one that punched him. And Jen, my wife, was the one taking him home. And as soon as I saw what was going on, it was like, okay, now what do I do? Because I'm the one right by the door. There's no other teachers out. Do I stand there and block the door so that more children don't spill out on the street to go after them? And that's what I did. Only one managed to get out, and I left that one for Jen to deal with. And she ended up being between them. But then finally, she finally got a hold of both of his fists and pushed him up against the wall to separate him. And in that situation, it worked out. I mean, it was the best thing that could have happened there. That subdued the situation enough. We were able to get the door closed, and I was able to go bring that other one back. And it worked out. But that was probably not the best response. But sometimes it's like in the heat of the moment, you do what you got to do. And we were able to work with both of those parents. They understood, you know, the one was Spanish, so we couldn't communicate very well with them, but we did our best to communicate, and everything worked out. It wasn't a huge issue. Let's see. Another aspect of the police getting involved, and we've had situations where. Or a situation in particular where a young boy or the mother in the home was, dad was in jail and mom was involved in drugs. So the children had the possibility of going to social services and getting placed in foster homes. And we were able to actually take the children and give them temporary homes, and the social services appreciated that. It helped where they didn't have to take them over, and we were able. They were fine with just us taking the children, rather than them becoming a part of the system, and working with, them having to work with them. So they do appreciate your involvement and our involvement in the city, in these young people's lives, and they are they're usually very willing to work together and allow you to work with the situation, and there's an understanding there. A difficult aspect of discipline and taking children home, like they've got that third mark that Jared was talking about. Now we take them home. We've had situations where if they went home like that, they got a pretty severe beating when they got home. So then it's like, okay, now what do you do? How do you even deal with this? Because we don't want to put them into that situation. In that situation, we actually, when we did have then where they needed to leave, we just simply took them out and kept them out of the classroom. Somebody was with them until it was time to go home, and then take them home with the rest of them. That way, they don't get that beating. Each situation, you gotta know the family, and that's actually part of what I'm sharing here next is that involvement with the parents. And I think that your Saturday afternoon visitation times are a very important aspect of ministry. Because the more you know the family, the more you know mom, and especially mom, most of them, I don't know how you find it, but most of them don't have a dad in the home. But the more you know mom, and the more the children know that you know mom, the more of a handle you have on things. And so that involvement of the parents is very important to know your family and know where they're at, and know what works for one family may not work for another. I would encourage you, if you have a situation where a child is being unruly and it's a consistent thing, a specific issue in their lives, is you talk to the mom about it and say, you know, hey, this is something that we have seen with the child, and we're not sure what the best response is for it. Just be open to mom about it and say, here's what we're facing. How do you think I should handle it? What would you appreciate about what kind of a response would you appreciate with this situation? And we will never be able to take their place as parents, even though we provide a place for these children as a surrogate mom or dad in a way. Because we can show them love that they don't get otherwise, and so there's a place that we fill that I believe is important. And yet, we can never take that place of mom and dad. And so that getting involved in the parents' lives and working with them and even some discipleship there, even though they may not be Christians, even though they may not know Christ and have the foundation for good child training, yet to be able to work with them and put some responsibility back on them is good. They need that. Some of the parents, they're just glad that you take their children out for a night because then it gives them a night off. And so to have creative ways where you put responsibility back on them is very positive and it helps to make them think, okay, so I have this situation. What do you want me to do in this situation? How should I walk through this? And it gets them involved in it and gives them a responsibility back to their children. And they have to think through it. And maybe they've never even thought through things quite to that extent where to know, oh, yeah, that's right. I need to work with my child. You know, many of these parents, Jared mentioned this, they think that their child is the victim. They think that their child is the best one. They think that, you know, hey, I mean, if my child's getting in trouble, it's probably because somebody else is influencing them and is causing them to respond the way they are. And so to put some responsibility back on the parent helps to be able to help them think through things. And you might have a situation where you will warn the parent and say, you know, we're facing this issue and these are our roles and he's been having a hard time obeying these roles, we've been having a problem with it. And so here's our consequences. When the roles get broken, here's our consequences. So next week, if I show up at your door halfway through the evening because he's broken these roles and he got these three marks, don't be surprised. You know, and so that communication is important between you and the parents. The more of that you have, the more trust there's there, the more it gets them involved, and the more it takes care of liability issues even, where there's relationship, there's a trust, and where those potential explosive situations get minimized because you have they know where you're coming from, and they trust you, and they understand the situation. And maybe even are beginning to understand their own children a little bit better, or their own hearts. And so, as much as you can, work with the parents and get them involved, and don't just simply take their place, because you will never be able to. Now, I don't like this setting here as far as me standing up here and you all sitting down there. I'm used to teaching this class in a classroom setting with about 12 students. So if at any time you have some questions or a comment, I'd like for you to be free to raise your hand or interject or whatever, because I'd much prefer an open discussion rather than me just sharing and then questions at the end. I know that works better for recording, but if you have anything at any point, I want you to feel free to raise your hand, and I'd rather have interaction. A difficult aspect that Jared mentioned of working with the parents or working with the children where their parents have brought them to, we've run into a situation where we're teaching on a particular aspect and teaching the wrongness and that this is sin, and sin takes you to hell. Sin will be judged by God. And all of a sudden, there's a child that's thinking, you know what? That's my mom. You know, is she going to go to hell? And those are things that are not the easiest then. Okay, so how do you walk through that with your children? And sometimes they'll just sit there and that's all going on in their mind and they go home and say, Mom, you're going to hell. And so while those things can be very positive in the light of the gospel being penetrating into that home and the child bringing that light and showing mom where she's at, it's things that we have to be very sensitive to and be careful with, that we portray the right attitude in the way that we instruct the children, that there is that attitude of honor. It may be that we need to just say, you know, this is what the Bible says, and leave it at that. It may be that we need to say, this is the way it's going to be in class, even though you're taught otherwise in the situation of hitting back and all of that. And that is very well drilled into, yeah, almost every single child. And so you may need to say, you may need to separate a little bit. In class, it's going to be this way. Even though your mom taught you this way, this is how it's going to be in class. And not make it a general thing that, you know what, if you hit somebody back out in the street, you're doing wrong. Don't make it a thing of judgment. Make it a thing of two things. One is, this is what the Bible says. And secondly, this is how it's going to be here, as long as you're with us. And then be ready and prepared to work with the parents when they go back to their parents with those things. And they do. And those are powerful opportunities to share with the parents concerning their souls. And I've been amazed at the opportunities that we get in homes because of working with their children. And so that involvement of the parents is very important, not just for the aspect of their child here in our classroom, but for that aspect of getting the light of the gospel into that home, being able to share Christ with the parents as well. And even with the parents, you have situations where, you know, they get offended at something that you said. We had a mom that when we told her that Jen and I are getting married, well, she was all excited. And she knew us well, or she knew myself well, especially. And, well, no, she knew both of us well. And was very excited when we told her that we were getting married. And I don't know, it was probably a year or two later, we went to her house and she met us outside. She was getting ready to go somewhere. And she said, guess what? I'm getting married. And she has a husband, that she's a divorced woman she had a very abusive situation, and she was in a situation where she felt like she couldn't even forgive him because of all the things that that man did to not herself, but her children. And so she had a boyfriend that had lived with her that they had lived together for quite some time. And now they were going to get married. And it was like, okay, so now how do you respond to that? And we just didn't say much at all because we didn't know how to respond. And immediately she jumped on it. She was like, you're not going to get excited for me? I got excited when you got married. And she stormed off. And it's like, okay, so did we do the wrong thing? How do we respond to this? But she knew that that was the way we were going to respond. She had her defenses up because she knew where we were at on it. And so it was like her response to our response was already pre-planned, because she knew how we felt and she knew where we were at on it. I don't know, it wasn't real long. It might have been 6 months or so before we went back there again. I don't think it was even that long. But next time we went back, she said, you know what, I'm sorry, I didn't respond to you right, or yeah, I blew up at you and that was not the right thing. And she was very apologetic, and she just said, I love you guys, and I'm glad for where you're at and all of that. And it was like, wow, you know, there's an appreciation for a clear stand, even though, just like the children fight against those boundaries, the parents may fight against those things as well, but there's an appreciation for those things. All right. How do we reach the children's hearts? How do we get into their world? I think Jared covered a lot of that already, and I just have a few examples of things that happened for us. One goes way back when he wasn't even in the children's ministry. It was before, the children's ministry was still very young, and I'll try to give a little bit of history with that here shortly. But we were going out on the street every Tuesday night. No, at that point, it was Thursday night, I think it was. And there was this particular short Spanish guy. They called him Shorty. His name was Raphael. And he, I don't know, there was something about him. My sister and I were together on a particular few streets that we went to every week. And we would say hi to him, and we would try to talk to him, but he was always busy. The most we ever got out of him was, I don't know, 5 minutes, because he was always busy. He didn't want to talk. He didn't have time for us. He basically tried to avoid us. One day, my sister saw in the newspaper that his wife died, and we had met her a few times. So we decided we're going to go to the funeral. We saw the funeral arrangements posted there in the newspaper, and we showed up at the funeral. And it was a short service. I mean, there was probably less than 20 people there. And I don't think we even went to the burial. But we showed up there, were there for 20 or 30 minutes, whatever it was, and went home again. And the next night when we came a few days later, came back to that street and knocked on his door, he opened up the door and said, "You're welcome anytime." And that was an opportunity then to get into that home. And we spent, that was in the fall, and we spent that winter in Bible study in his home every night or every week. And though at the end he turned his back on the Lord, that simple act of showing an interest in his life and being there in a time of difficulty open the doors wide. And you'll find that, and I'm sure that you have found that in ministry already, is that when there's a willingness to get involved in their lives, that opens up the door. And that's true for the parents, that's true for the children. And we need those ways. Sometimes there's situations like that one where it's just like, how do we get there? Okay, we have a burden for this person. We feel like the Lord has put this person on our hearts. How do we actually reach them? How do we get to the place where we can communicate with them? Look for those opportunities. God may have those opportunities for you to be able to then have a fruitful ministry with them. Another situation that I think of is we had a class where the class just was not going well. My wife, again, it was... My wife and I worked together in the children's ministry for, what was it, 7 years? 8 years? 7 years before we even started any kind of relationship otherwise. And part of that time we worked on the same route together, and I was the captain of the route, and so I wasn't in any one classroom, but was in her classroom quite a bit. And then later I became administrator or co-administrator of the ministry as a whole. And it was around that same time that she was assigned to be the secretary of the ministry. So we worked together a lot before we were married, and have a lot of memories together, even before we were courting or married. So in this particular situation, it was her in the classroom, and there were the other teachers in the classroom for some reason weren't there that night, and she was by herself in the classroom. She just had five or six. It was a small class that night, and I happened to look in the window, and it was chaos in there. There were a couple on the table, standing on the table, and it was just a mess in there. And so I walked in and said, "Okay, we're going home," just like that. I just, you know, dropped the bomb, and that was the wrong thing to do, to just without any kind of warning, just, "Hey, we're all going home," and so we loaded up and we took them home, and the one girl, well, would have been 14, 15 at the time, she lived with her grandmother, and her grandmother was upset when she came home and told her what happened, and everybody was all upset because we just closed things down and took them home, and everybody was upset, and even grandmother was upset. And so we stopped at, next week, I think it was, we wrote a card and stopped at the local store and got some fresh cut flowers, $6 or whatever it was, and went to the door, and they weren't home, or they didn't answer, one or the other. But we just left it on the doorknob and then came back a week later or so. And through that, we actually got to get into the home. And up to that point, Grandma had, you know, when we came to the door, she would just kind of open the door a crack and peek out and talk to us through that. And we didn't have much opportunity into her life at all. And there were maybe once or twice where we were able to, maybe it was more than that, where we were able to get in. Okay, so Millie was at home and we were able to actually, she would invite us in, but Grandma would disappear if we actually came in. It was always the girl that we were working with, she would invite us in, and we never saw anything of Grandma. But after this situation that was a very unpleasant situation where I actually made some mistakes, but it was through that then, I believe, it was just within a few weeks of that where Millie was back in class again, and the next time we went to the home, we were actually able to get into the home, and Grandma was there. And she talked to us, and since then, well, now in the last few years, we haven't had communication with her because she stopped coming and then she moved out of the area. But for many years after that, then we were able to get into that home. We were able to talk to Grandma, and there were times where we even went into the home when Millie wasn't there, when the girl wasn't there. Where before that would have been a total impossible situation. So God is able to use situations. Where even a situation like that and turn it around for good. But those opportunities are opportunities then to be able to get a little closer and to hear their heart and to build that relationship. Another one that I think of is a situation with a young boy where he was just an unruly young man, and nobody, it seemed like, was able to work with him. And, you know, he would just so be within the boundaries so that he could keep coming back, and yet it just had an underlying attitude, and it was just difficult to know how to deal with him. Well, in choir, the choir director, she took an interest in this young man, and she talked to him in a total, it seemed like in a totally different way than the rest of us, where the rest of us, it was like, this Isaac, you know, it's just, how do we deal with him, this Hurricane Isaac, you know, and it was just, but she talked to him with respect. She talked to him, and I don't know if she even took him out to her home some or not. I don't think she did. It was just in the classroom that she was able to draw him out, talk to him, and she was able to get his respect. And she had control of him like no one else did, and no one else has since then. Since she's not in choir anymore, and the choir is actually not going right now, he's stopped coming since. But it was a situation where it was like, wow, this young lady or this teacher took an interest in this boy and showed him some respect and gave him some, you know, you're a person too. And she was able to get into his heart in that way, and she could do anything she wanted with him. And she could also speak into his life then, in ways that no one else could. So, those are ways that we can get into their hearts, is by showing an interest in them, by having taking opportunities that come before us to be able to get a little closer, to understand them a little bit better, to help them even understand us, and be able to bridge those gaps. Another situation that I think of is a young girl that, again, had quite a mouth, and she was being unruly in class, and I took her out, and I don't know, spent probably 5 minutes with her just talking, just what Jared said, and it was like, okay. After that, I said, you can go back into the classroom, but if I hear anything else, then I'm just going to take you home. And just that 5 minutes, she went back into the classroom, and Jen asked me later, I think it was you, asked me later, what did you do to her? She was perfect the rest of the night. And it was very unusual for her to be even, that quiet, period. But just that 5 minutes spent with her, trying to draw her out and then giving her a clear warning of what will happen next if she continues to be unruly, was something that, again, was an opportunity to get into her heart. And she had respect for me then in ways that I hadn't seen before that and didn't have for many other teachers. All right. Visitation, purposes and goals in visiting. And I know this is something that you have made a priority in the ministry here. And I think that's important. It gives an opportunity to get into the home. You can see where they live, how they live. You get to meet their other siblings. You get to meet the parents. You get to meet other important people in their lives. And they get to meet you, relatives, maybe dad happens to be there at the time, whatever it may be. The more you are in the home, the more opportunities you have to meet other people that are important to them and understand where they're coming from. And the other thing that it does is just simply getting out and getting into the home is a burden. There's a burden that comes out of that as you see the situation that some of these children are in. And one of the things that I've noticed in getting into the homes that is just simply the absence of the dining room table. Just like Jared mentioned, mom might cook once a week. And in many of these homes anymore, you don't even see a dining room table. There's no table there because they don't eat together. And that aspect of family togetherness just isn't there. And yet they have an aspect of family that that some of us don't have. And it's just kind of an interesting... But those are things that you see when you get in the home that you don't see otherwise. These profiles are things that the way that you understand their situation the best is when you get into the home. And by the way, in this orientation course, we normally have an assignment for our young people to get into a home and do a profile and find out, what they can about the family and about where they're at. And some of those situations are incredible. And I'll give a few profiles later here, too, if we have time. Getting into their home brings you closer to them. Sometimes you get to eat a meal with them. Sometimes you just simply get to spend time with the family. It gives opportunity, all kinds of opportunities that if you just simply bring the children out, you don't get. Things to do, things that we do, we might read a story with the children. We might help them with their homework, play a game, just simply spending time with them. But one of the things we try to do in visitation, and not all of our routes do visitation on a regular basis. Some have it scheduled in on a monthly basis. Others do it a little more irregularly. And some of them don't have a regular Tuesday night visitation night that make the visitation a priority other times. But it's something that we consider very important for that relationship with the parents. And And they, if it's done in a positive way like that, they love it. They love that opportunity for you to be able to get into their home. Now, one of the things we face is, what do you do with the TV when you're in their home, you're on their turf? And that's one that, again, needs to be answered with an understanding of the family. If mom is in front of the TV and she's really intent on her program, it may be best just simply to take the children in another room or whatever so that you can have an opportunity to share. If you're in the same room with the TV and you're competing with the TV, it just seems like you don't get anywhere. And you have to know your family. But I have often just simply, in a situation like that, either asked if it can be turned down, asked if it can be turned off, or, depending on my relationship, went and turned it off myself. And those things are very understood. TV is such a normal part of their lives. I mean, many of them have this thing playing constantly, even if there's not somebody in front of them. And so they're hardly even aware of the background noise. And it's just there. And so they don't even think about it when you come in that this thing is distracting. But as soon as you mention something, can this be turned down or off or whatever? It's like, oh, yeah, of course, I'm sorry. You know, and it's just, they didn't think about it. But as soon as you mention it, oh, yeah, of course, you know, sorry. You know, and so don't be afraid to ask that it be turned off or the volume be turned down or whatever is needed there so that you can have some meaningful time with them. Because whether it's them being distracted by their favorite sports star or you being distracted because of whatever's going on, those are real things that if you don't do something about it, then you're probably not going to have a meaningful time there. All right. I missed one. Snack time is one that is an important aspect of class responsibility or an important part of the evening, because it gives opportunity for one-on-one, a time to be able to share together. I don't know how you do your snack time, but our snack times are a little bit more informal, where you can talk, you can get up out of your seats some, and there's, you know, it's a little bit more informal. And there's opportunity for interaction and very positive opportunities for interaction one-on-one. However, unless there's some structure there and some clear expectations, it can be a time then where it's just chaos. And there's no, you know, then there's nothing meaningful because people are running all over the place. One of the things that we have had to remind ourselves of is that snack time is not a time then for the teachers to talk or for, you know, all the teachers to be out and getting the snack ready or they happen to start talking together out in the classroom and in the classroom there might not be a teacher or there might just be one teacher and it's it's opportunity for confusion and opportunity for chaos. So make sure that your snack times are still structured, and that there's still expectations for rules. It can be a very good, powerful tool for ministry to them, building relationships. All right, extra activities other than Tuesday evening are very necessary, I believe, in being able to build those relationships that Jared was talking about. You will be amazed, if you haven't done it, you will be amazed at what some of those things do. I mean, I think of many situations, but one in particular where I think it was even a Tuesday evening, it wasn't even another activity, where we went to the park instead of having class that night. And there were a couple of the children that wanted to go on a walk, and two or three of them, and I went with them. And we just went through the woods, took a short walk together. And it wasn't even that long, but I noticed in the next few weeks that I had a lot more control over those, especially the one that tended to be a little bit more of a troublemaker, just from that little bit of time with them spent in an activity other than classroom, that time gave opportunity then where I could have a lot more control and I could speak into his life. So do those extra activities. Spend those times outside of the classroom. It doesn't even have to be anything that's expensive. It doesn't have to be anything extraordinary. It can be something just as simple as bringing them into your home. And it gives them a welcome break from their home and from the things that they face there. And just simply bring them into your family structure. And, setting at the breakfast table and eating together and having devotions together with your family and just make them a part of your normal family life. And they love it. It doesn't have to be anything that's, any big thriller or anything like that. Just the simple things are very meaningful to them. We always like when and encourage this for our young people is to have them bring their children. If you're going to spend the weekend with them, bring them out and then even keep them overnight Saturday and bring them to church in the morning so that they can see some of who we are and where we're at. And there's not just where we're always in their home, but they're also in our home and they can see where we're at. One of the things that you need to keep in mind in some of these special activities, especially if it's a group activity where there's, a dozen of you doing something together, going to the zoo, spending some time at the park, whatever it may be, you will find that those activities you might not get much out of. You might not be able to have a good game of volleyball and you're just really enjoying yourself and all of those things. I don't know if it's if you all here enjoy volleyball like the youth do in Pennsylvania, but if you're going to try to make sure you have a good time, you're going to find that the children are gone. So your focus in these special activities is the children and the young people that you're ministering to, and you may find that you don't get a thing out of the evening besides just the fun of spending time with them. But keep that in mind and constantly remind yourself and each other of that when you see it happening. It's so easy in a group setting. We have a big picnic every year where our entire ministry comes together for a picnic, we do that every year in the summer, and it's probably 150 or 200 people together. And so it's easy to just kind of either have a game where you're enjoying yourself, and you're getting into the game, or you're starting to talk and you get into a group discussion or whatever and forget that that you've got responsibilities. So remind each other. We all need those reminders. It's easy to get involved in just each other and in having a good time yourself. But you're not there for a good time for yourself. The other important thing that I missed with parents, and this goes both with special activities and otherwise, is make sure you talk directly to the parents before taking your child out for a special activity. Or even for a Tuesday, or for us for a Tuesday night, we have made it a policy that if a child wants to come, he or she is new and they haven't come before. A friend wants to bring them. We don't just say, "Oh, sure, come along." No, where do you live? What's your phone number? We'll try to talk to your parents if we're running late or whatever. They might not even be able to come that week, but sometime during that week we'll try to go and talk to their parents and find out where they're at and see if their child can come. Just a couple weeks ago there was an article in the paper where a child was reported missing on Friday evening after school. She didn't come home from school, and the parents called the police. They the child's missing, and somehow there must have been a feeling that there wasn't anything involved, because they didn't, you know, they weren't real concerned about it, and yet they were on the lookout for this child. Well, a day and a half later, she was found in church on Sunday morning with a friend, and had gone home with a friend, and mom never knew anything about it. And so make sure that if a child is with you, that you communicate directly to the children or to the parents, and not just go on the word of the child or the youth. I think that's a very important aspect of communication with the parents, so that there's no room for misunderstandings or anything like that, where you have communicated directly with the parents. They have your phone number, you have theirs, and there's a way to for them to be able to get a hold of you, and you to be able to get a hold of them. All right, I guess I'm out of time. I wanted to go over the structure. I had some questions brought to me on our structure for how we go over things. How we have our structure set up. Should I go ahead with that yet, or okay? So I'm going to need that. We started as two young men went into the city, and they decided they're going to get busy about the call of God on their lives, and to go and preach the gospel. And they started going, and they made it a regular thing. They decided, you know, we're going to do this on a regular basis. And some of us started hearing about this and said, hey, can we come too? And so it wasn't long at all. It was within a few weeks or a month or two that there were 20 or 25 of us going in on a regular basis. And that was more for street evangelism, street ministry, passing out tracts, door-to-door, whatever. And then next, from that then came, one of the young men had an interest in children, and he started taking some twins that he had met, and started taking them with him on, and you can ignore that for now, I'm coming to that, started taking the children with him to go door to door, and then started giving them more focus later as they started, you know, building relationship, and he decided, well, we need to also give them some time and teach them the Bible. So that's how the children's ministry started. It was very disorganized at first, and more just one of the older young men. They led out, and we made a lot of mistakes, and we actually had some bad situations that happened because of the lack of leadership there. But then there was an administrator put in place by the ministry, and that was Jared's dad, Jeff. He was put in place as an administrator, and that's how we went for several years until a second one was put in, which was myself, and then we went with that for a number of years more, until we finally recognized the need for a bit more structure. And we bought a building in 2005, and then again in 2007 we bought another one right beside it, or another set of properties. And it wasn't just until like 9 months ago that we finally recognized the need. You know what? Stop. We need some more structure here. We're not able to cover everything with just two men in administration. And so we formed a board. So go ahead and put that up. So our structure currently is where we are under the church. So we have, we have right there. Our elders are we are under the elders of the church, and Brother Aaron is the elder that is specifically assigned to watch over this. And then there's a board of directors that is in place then to give the leadership to the ministry. Jeff and I, up to that point as administrators, we had functioned pretty much in that same place where it was under the church, a minister, and then the two of us. But now we have the board that is able to then give the direction to the ministry. The decisions go through the board. If there's bigger things that need to be worked through, it goes to the elders. And if depending what it is, it could go to a brothers meeting as well. But for the most part, we're able to be governed just by the board of directors under the direction and authority of the elders. And then we have the structure under that, with most of our main activities falling under the spiritual director, which is Brother Jeff, and our Tuesday night activity choir, which we don't have going right now, activities, which is Jared, and then we have a discipleship class, which those who have come to the Lord or those who are very serious and desire to know more are under the discipleship. And then we also have the logistics over here on this side that are taken care of by a few. So that's just our structure. I'd gotten some questions on that last night, and so I thought it would be good just to show what our structure is. And it's interesting, this may not mean much to you, but it was interesting to us as we sat down to come up with this. We took probably, 10 hours total between 3 or 4 different meetings to come up with this. And I think that it took some time because we wanted to make sure we have a good structure in place. And I think that's important. And it helped us by actually sitting down and diagramming it out. It helped us to think through, where are we at? What's our actual authority structure? And what are we, who's responsible to who and all of that. And so it took a lot of time, because we felt like it was important to make sure we have good organizational structure there. Our mission statement. Let's see. I think I have that somewhere. I'll have to get that. I don't know if I have it printed right now. I could try to say it. I don't have it memorized, but I think I'll wait on that. I'll get the actual wording and bring it next time, or maybe tomorrow morning. Any other questions? I know I covered a lot and didn't give much time for interaction, but I want that feedback. So go ahead.
Just wondering, with the very early on in this session, you talked about how important it is to be united as teachers, and I completely agree with. Is it just something it's important, or do you take specific action to do specific things to stick together?
Yeah, we do specific things. In this structure, we have 6 different routes, and now we're working on forming a 7th one where there's a captain, we call captain, over that route, and that captain then is responsible for his route and the teachers in his route. And generally, every night before the activities, they'll get together, each route separately, to pray together, to talk about anything that needs to be talked about, and make sure that there is a cohesion there. Then once a month, we have what we call a general meeting where everybody gets together, so that there's not just 7 different little routes doing their own thing, but there's also some cohesion between the routes. And then we also have captains meetings where the captains get together, and there's some discipleship and focus on what is the captain's responsibility, and working through whatever needs to be worked through. It gives an opportunity to discuss among the captains, so we do some of that on purpose to make sure that there's a unitedness there. And I think the most important aspect of that is that time before, of praying together, sharing together, going over everything, making sure everybody's on the same page before you go out. And many of them also then at the end of the evening will get together. Is there anything that needs to be talked about? And that helps. Those are important to keep that that communication and the unitedness there. Does that answer that?
Yes.
All right. Any others? Okay. Shall we take a quick break? 5-minute break and get together, and then Jared will share on teaching.